Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brown, Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of hosting an intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's central concept was less is more, more or less, and he invariably always offered more. Today, let me introduce who's with us. We have a truncated group of Brown Briefly's, what I refer to as the strong members of the group.
yeah. Okay.
I worked for a court of appeals. There's Division 1, 2, and 3, and the Division 3 out of Tacoma always referred to themselves as the strong division.
Yeah, there you go.
To the chagrin of the other two courts. Bruce Holman and Kevin are not with us. Bruce has a graduation event, and Kevin is on a long-awaited vacation and will be joining us in future Brown Briefly's when and if he can. But manning the VOV downtown or uptown, depending on what you call it, Gene Bosch Studio, and engineering the show is my friend, flight instructor, Vachon Airport Commissioner, West Texas Roughneck, and Eastern Montana band member, former Army Intelligence Officer, and fellow treetop crasher, Truman O'Brien. How are you doing this morning, Truman?
Hey, good morning. I wasn't sure you were going to get through all of that.
I know. Yeah. I'm feeling a little under the weather. That's why I'm on Zoom today. But the show must go on, and I thought I could get that all out in one breath, and I was able to do it.
Well, you did good. You did good. By the way, how are you feeling? You feeling better? You look pretty good.
Well, you know, if you look good, you feel good.
That's right. That's right. I know that.
Well, I'm going to the doctor this afternoon to check me out. I got these various cold-like maladies that seem to be hanging on. Now I have the screaming child ear pain that you have on airplanes.
Oh, no.
You know? It's sort of like, can't hear a thing out of one side of my head.
But, oh, my gosh.
That's okay.
You're going to get better.
Oh, yeah, I will. Mine is the voice of Craig Bellis, former repo man, Pinkerton guardian of Pan American's first 747. Low fashion salesman of high fashion shoes. Constitutional law professor and two-time Half-Bright scholar. And I'm just told you how I feel, so I'm carrying on. But we also have the most important person with us today is one of the co-founders of the Journeyman Institute, Vachon's own Nikki Wilkes. How you doing today, Nikki?
Yeah, hey, fellas. I'm doing pretty well. I've definitely been soaking in these transitions to the sunshine months, and honestly, this beckons me to be outside, which is my happy place. So I'm checking in with a lot of joy in my heart and feeling some gratitude for being invited onto the show with you.
Cool.
Oh, great. We're thrilled that you're here, and we'll be very interested to hear about some of the activities that you're engaged in right now and will be engaged in. I went on your website and I've been following you on Facebook. You certainly have been busy.
That might be an understatement, but yeah, we got a lot going on.
Yeah,
you do have a lot going on. Luckily, you seem to have a lot of people helping you. But we'll get to that in a moment. Let me take a moment here to check in to what you've been up to, Truman. What have you been up to last week?
Well, I have to tell you, since this is the Brown Briefly, I have to share with you a really wonderful thing that happened to me last week. Sheila Brown, Brian's lovely wife, got a hold of me and gave me a gift. And what this gift is, it's an hourglass like timer, and it's set inside of a beautiful little wooden case. And the plaque on the outside says that this sand in this hourglass-like device came from the Killdevil Hills in Kitty Hawk, where the Wright brothers first flew in 1903. And that the time that the hourglass or the glass, the sand goes through the mechanism is about 98 seconds, which was the length of their first flight of their airplane. And this device was made by one of the heads of the art department at the Time magazine and presented to Brian, of course, many, many years ago. But this, she gave this to me, and I'm treasuring it as an amazing gift. It's something that should be in the Smithsonian, I think. I'm just knocked out by that, and I just wanted to share that with you. So there you go.
It is very cool, no question about it, and very apropos for somebody whose entire career, well, not entire career, but the better part of your career has been in airplanes.
Airplanes, yeah, for sure.
So. Hey, Nikki, without getting into all the work you do, have you had any time to do anything else besides working with the Journeyman over the last week?
Yeah, for sure. One of my highlights really of this year was moving into a home that we built. And so 5 years ago, actually last month in May, we were fortunate enough to buy a piece of raw land and slowly work through the development process. And we've been moved in for a couple months and just chipping away on, you know, some of the final remaining pieces of making it comfortable. But a lot of, you know, the last week I can attribute my joy and just feeling connected to Vashon and my experience here and really what makes this place feel like home for me and many others, being outside with my kids, seeing our dogs run around and just attending to the land and creating beauty and really restoring it back to a way that feels to be in harmony. So that's really my last week and feeling like a highlight there.
Wow.
Well, that is a highlight. That sounds like a great week. I had a little family activity this last week myself. Our son came up from Ashland, Oregon. Nick is his name, Nicholas.
How about that?
And we were able to, you know, he was here on First Friday, of course. So we did the whole walk and the activities downtown, which are really cool. I'm thoroughly enjoying that. And it's my understanding that we're going to have music on the street here, maybe next First Friday, which would even be neater, people out there dancing and stuff. It's a great, great community. I have to just mention my son. I'm very proud of him for very various reasons, but, he is quite the athlete. He almost died of cancer several years ago, but he won the eight-man crew in Cambridge for the University of Washington, which is a big deal, number one. And he also won two state football championships. He didn't, but the team he was on, he was playing on down at Capitol High in Olympia did. It was quite the experience. So he's still a great athlete and a great young man. And I was very pleased to spend some time with him. Today is June 6th. I think many of us know what June 6th is. It's the 157th day of the year. 206 days remain until the end of the year. And there are 38 days. I can't read my own typing. I'm in trouble. 38 days left before the commencement of the Vashon Strawberry Festival. It starts on July 14th. On this day in 1844, the YMCA was founded in London. I resisted the temptation to put the song on.
I was just thinking that, absolutely. You don't know how close I came to singing it.
I was
going to
say, thank God it's radio.
Exactly.
On this day in 1889, the Great Seattle Fire destroyed virtually all of downtown Seattle. Mm. And, of course, on this day in 1944, Operation Neptune D-Day, the Normandy landings occurred, which were the largest seaborne invasion in history. I was listening to your show, Truman, just preceding the Brown Briefly, where you raised the inquiry of what the D in D-Day stands yeah, for. Yeah. And it would appear it's the Great Redundancy.
It is.
It's Day-Day, isn't it?
It is Day-Day. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps we should explain that.
Yeah,
that,
go ahead.
That building up to it, it was always D-20 or D-10, D-5. And so when it came to D-Day, it was today's the day. So it is D-Day. There you go.
Yep. Not many people actually know that. You know.
Bit of trivia that you can win a beer at a bar.
Maybe.
I actually did know that one, and I think it's because when I was in middle school, I watched the History Channel.
I
may have been the only one of my peer group that would do that, but I remember that piece of trivia and being like, oh, alliteration matters.
Oh, good. I'm glad to know somebody did know it.
And it's interesting. You're one of the few people who knew it and remembered it.
Exactly. Yeah, remembered it more importantly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My father, who did not embellish things, he was very soft spoken in terms of talking about himself and the war, was in the Army Corps of Fighting Engineers, and landed in France. I think it was 2 days after D-Day to build the bridges that the Allies needed to proceed across France that they had just blown up. Mm-hmm. He won a Purple Heart there. Wow. And it could all happen again if we're not careful. Mm. So, knock on wood. Let's talk about our small talk segment. Let's talk about Vashon's own Journeyman Institute. Mm. I have Nikki Wilkes here today, who is a co-founder with Alex Craighead. Alex couldn't make it today. But Nikki, you were born on Vashon, weren't you?
I was. I have the honor of being one of maybe few, but as I go on in life, I learn there are more than just a very few of us, who was literally born on the island thanks to a midwife, Margaret Smith. And which is cool because a tradition that my wife currently carries on is Vashon's own home birth midwife.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there's not a ton of kids that are still born on the island, but she is often the first hands they feel when they come onto the earth. And her name's Caitlin Costley. She runs Vashon Island Midwifery.
That is very cool. But you met my daughter this morning. She was born while we were living on the island, but we actually did go off island for her to be born. But
yeah.
She spent her first days here, so there
right
you
on.
Go. There you go.
Yeah, I would think that it's a rare number of individuals on the island now who were actually born here.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I run into people more and more these days who left the island and have now come back again.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
Well, sometimes it's hard to know how good something is until we see it from a different perspective.
That's right. You know? That's right.
That's exactly right. Tell us a little more about yourself and what motivated you, Nikki, to create the Journeyman organization.
It's a perfect segue with what I just said, too, because, you know, I was born here. I think I got to thrive as a child in what I like to call the Garden of Vashon, a place where adults, you know, really dedicate a lot of their lives to being able to support young folks. And, you know, we're often heralded as having pretty good schools and a lot of abundant natural spaces for kiddos. And I loved childhood here. And when I became an adolescent, really in my teen years is when I really began to feel suffocated and began to struggle emotionally, especially, and didn't really feel like I had great role models. There wasn't a lot of programming aside from sports that was interesting to me. And so those really struggles and a lot of my own like repression of my needs and I'd say some of the softer sides of myself really began to fester. And so after I left, I was 17 when I left after high school, I began to notice a lot of the patterns of the work and experiences that I was having. And a lot of that was disconnection and suffering of people. And particularly looking at patterns of a lot of the boys that I was working with as a coach and as an admission counselor. So those were two of the roles I had in early adulthood, particularly when I started working in college admissions as I finished my grad program. I was working with tons of teenagers who were 16, 17, 18, about to start their life, and either had no idea who they were or what they were really feeling called to do with their lives, or I like to say pretended that they did, because the ones that were so sure at 18 that they knew they wanted to be an accountant or whatever, those were actually a little more concerning to me, because I like to say that's a time in our lives when we are often best left to experiment and rule things out and really soak up life experiences before committing ourselves to a lifetime of something. But the patterns I was noticing in boys were really alarming. And as a lacrosse coach, I began to realize that a lot of my own experiences and conditioning as a male were the same things that were leading a lot of my players and the young folks that I was working with to really struggle to communicate, struggle to show up with kindness and compassion for other people, and also really show up as not knowing how to love themselves. And one of the fun things about our journeyman origin story is that Alex Craighead, who you mentioned, is our other co-founder. He and I have been best friends since middle school. And we actually met in second grade in Mr. Hill's class for the first time. So we've known each other since we were like seven. But we've been really tight since middle school, all through high school. We did some of college together. And in our early adulthood, we stayed in really close contact. And Alex went into education and began noticing a lot of the same patterns. And particularly when he moved to San Francisco, he started working at a transitional high school for students who had been either in the justice system, had been incarcerated, juvenile hall situations, or were kind of one step away from that. And they weren't able to go to a traditional high school anymore. And I don't remember the exact number, but I think it was something like 98% of the students were male. And it wasn't like an all-boys school. It was just a statistic that shows you, particularly in traditional education, who's not getting served well in that setup. And in that case too, it was mostly males of color. I mean, largely Black and Latino population, and just highly impacted. And through those conversations, as we were apart, we weren't living around each other at the same time, both of us just really began to feel a centering of our life mission and really what we wanted to devote ourselves to. And as cultural patterns started to emerge, and really some of the things that we, I think, brought our broad attention to with the Me Too movement and the heightened awareness of things like school shootings, violence against women, and also just violence, we wanted to look at boys and men not as the problem, but as a critical part of the solution, and orient a lot of our attention to ask the question, how can we love our boys and young men in a way that has them feel connected to themselves and their community and ultimately creates a sense of belonging for them, so they don't have to prove themselves, they don't have to go take crazy risks, or they don't have to shut out life because it's so painful, but ultimately they can feel accepted for who they are and feel like there's a really beautiful way to be in the world that is also inclusive of being a boy or being a man.
Let me ask you this, from your experience, your own personal experience as a young man, and then your experience with young men younger than you, mm-hmm. Are the needs different or greater now, you think, than perhaps when you were young? Or they're different, aren't they?
Yeah, they're different. That's such a great question. I would be, I think, ill-advised to say they're greater or less than, but they definitely feel different. And to me, a lot of that is, related to the ease of checking out from life. So I grew up with video games, right? Like, we had video games, but we didn't have, like, immersive virtual reality video games that you could play online whenever you wanted. You know, we didn't have phone video games that you could play during class. We didn't have access to pornography in the same way that young guys do now. And so I think a lot of the need is it's heightened and it's more intense in certain ways. And I think a lot of the adults and mentors and folks who care about young people have struggled to keep up with the need and to bring our attention to like what the current landscape is that young people are navigating, because technology has accelerated super fast in the last, you know, couple decades especially. So I remember being a kid and getting, I think I got a James Bond video game from the Nintendo 64 when I was in, I don't know, maybe late elementary school or middle school. And it had like a mature rating on it or whatever, but like my parents didn't pay any attention to it. They didn't know they needed to. But like one time, I think it was my dad came in and he was just watching the screen and there's like tons of bloodshed and killing and all this stuff. And he was like, what is this? You know? And it, in that moment, I think he realized like, oh, wow, like I actually have to track this stuff. This is different. You know, it's not just Atari like Pac-Man stuff. Like there's different things going on. And that to me is sort of like that was the fire that was started. And now we have gasoline poured on that fire in many ways. And that to me is the difference that I think a lot of us are trying to adjust to right now.
Yeah, you know, we keep seeing and hearing isolation, you know, that we heard that the internet and all was going to promote this togetherness because we're all connected, but we're finding that it's doing the opposite. Do you find that to be true as well or no?
100%. Yeah. I like to believe that these tools that we have of social media and you know, even AI now can be used to facilitate connection, but they're not currently designed to do that. They're designed to entertain and capture attention as opposed to cultivate connection for people. So it's actually extraordinary when anybody, particularly the developing mind of a young person, is able to learn how to use one of these tools for anything except for consumption.
Yeah.
And it happens, but it's definitely not the rule. It's the exception.
Right. Right. You learn how to become a first person shooter.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Online.
You know, we here at the Voice of Vashon call ourselves the Island Connection. Mm-hmm. And we like to think of ourselves as trying to get people together and working together. Many of our nonprofits, you know, or that we associate with. And I kind of want to know if there's something that we can do that the station would do that could help with this effort. And is there anything that comes to mind to you of how we might use this medium?
That's a lovely question. I have the fun experience of also having taught at the high school for 5 years. And while I was there, I was aware of the production club and mm-hmm. a lot of the efforts of, you know, some of the teachers, but also just some of the folks who were training students to use, you know, some of this technology. And I'll call it old school, even though I think it also has a very important place in our modern world, too. But I don't know yet. And one of the fun seeds that we've been kind of cultivating on the side is imagining a really youth-centered podcast/radio show that is not just highlighting youth voice, but that's really allowing them to bring the community into their world in an authentic way. And I think that the location of this station is important too. It's quite literally at the center of the village. That's a word I use a lot, village, that's, you know, intentional, but to put youth at the center of the village is critical. And to do that in a way that centers their voice and experience, particularly in a phase of our modern culture that usually relegates youth to being off to the side or just something to be managed, not really taken seriously. That to me is exciting, to imagine them having like a consistent amplification and platform to share about what's important to them and the vision for they have for the future. I think Voice of Vashon could be a key part of that.
Great.
Good. Yeah,
thank
keep,
you,
keep us in mind.
Yeah, for sure.
In that regard, because we are upping our podcast ante and looking for more content in that regard. So for sure.
Love it.
Truman, did I step on you?
No, not at all. And thanks for continuing with that. And I really, I completely agree, Nikki. I think that there's an opportunity that exists here that we can get more involved, and we're looking at that too. I mean, we've been wanting to get into the high school somehow, and I don't know if, you know, we even talked about putting a little station there, you know, all kinds of stuff. But I just think there's an opportunity there that we're missing that we really need to work toward.
I agree. We'll stay in touch. This is that's a fun vision to hold together.
Good, good.
So we kind of did the short version of the societal forces.
Mm-hmm.
The bad examples of some of our leaders. That kind of goes without saying on this show. So what did you and Alex decide to do? How did you decide you were going to really try to address some of these issues of the pressures, to use an overtaxed phrase, the masculine, you know, toxicity, or toxic masculinity. How did you decide to, you know, what did you decide to start up and why?
Yeah. So that story picks up when Alex was out in Germany. He was teaching in Germany at the time, and I was down in Southern California. I just had just become a father around that time, and I was really in my own initiatory fire of letting go of my childhood and learning how to be a dad. But I had to, for my master's program, which was in entrepreneurship, I had to write like a ton of business plans. That was part of my my task. And one of them was for a mentoring network. And I was really dreaming into like what it would be like to tap into this resource that I felt like I had access to, all these young adults who were just on fire in their lives and were really effective and you know, creating a lot of value for the world, but had no interface with youth. And the gap that I was seeing was like, nobody hangs out with young people except for their parents and people who are, you know, teaching them. But our society is oriented so that if you don't have kids and you're between the ages of 25 and, you know, 40, and your friends don't have kids, you're not really spending time with youth. And the vision that I was kind of percolating at the time with was like, what if we made those connections intentionally and facilitated some of the, I'll say, models of apprenticeship, and a word that we actually pulled from the Europeans, the journeyman, right? The one who leaves their home to go and adventure and apprentice in a craft and essentially learn a key skill, was something that we were excited about. So I sent that business plan to Alex when he was out in Germany, and he just lit up and was like, dude, I want to do this. And for the next year and a half or so, we kind of bounced ideas off each other, and we started doing some training that was related, but nothing had really coalesced yet. And what happened next was pretty impactful for both of us. We were both back on Vashon, and you know, the previous decade since we had graduated high school, you know, every year or two we would just get news of another tragic loss. Often it was a youth suicide, sometimes it was reckless driving, drug and alcohol related, and it's just heartbreaking. I mean, it happens everywhere, but I think there's something about the tightness and small nature of Vashon where the shockwaves are really severe. And I'm even feeling emotional right now just thinking about a lot of it. But we were standing around a fire with some friends, and we heard about a suicide of another young person. And this was about 8 years ago. And Alex and I looked at each other and just said, now's the time. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about this for a while, and we can do this. We need to start. And so we started drawing up some of the frameworks for Journeymen before we had a name, before we had a real clear sense of what it was going to become. And one of the major catalysts for us to land us at our current model was that both of us participated in a vision fast, really a modern version of a rite of passage that has a lot of pan-cultural ties, but that's something that can also be attributed to Northwest Native American folks and how they facilitate an initiation into their communities for young people. And that involved a 10-day wilderness experience and fasting solo out on the land for 3 or 4 days. And during that time, you know, really going through a ritual process of asking questions like, who am I? What are my values? What are my gifts for my people? And how can I apply those gifts to create connection and love in the world? And, even though both of us were separate in that experience, we came back with a lot of alignment with what we needed and wanted to do. And that Vision Fast really, I want to say, crystallized into the beginnings of what Journeyman became. And that was the year following. So that inspired our rites of passage model, which is something that we still continue to this day. We run, you know, a lot of spring and summertime camps and intensive experiences that are designed to facilitate a similar experience for youth as young as 12, all the way through young adulthood into their early 20s.
You have a lot of different programs. Your website, by the way, is a beautiful thing. If what is technically the website address?
It's journeyman.us.
Okay. And if you forget that, just put in Journeyman Vashon, it'll pop right up.
Yeah.
But I went on there again to take a look at the camps, rites of passage, Ignite the Spark, Band of Brothers, in-school monitoring, adventure courses, wayfinders, voyagers. And that's just to name a few.
Yeah.
How many young people do you have participate in Journeyman typically in a year?
My best guess is somewhere between 150 and 200.
Wow.
Okay. And some of this is through the schools and some of it is independent of the schools, or how does that work?
Yeah, it is. And I should say too, this year it's actually going to be higher than that number because we just ran, we took over the fifth grade camp, which historically was out to Camp Waskowitz. And a couple of years ago, they decided to bring it to Camp South. And this year, we were invited to really bring the facilitation and the camp experience to the Camp South venue. So we had 100 fifth graders about a week and a half ago for their three-day camp. We'll do like dedicated, what we would call a transformational camp experience in partnership with the schools. We've done it with McMurray here on the island for the eighth graders as they culminate their experience. As I mentioned, we've now done it with the fifth graders. We'll be doing a ninth grade kind of orientation retreat for the incoming class at the high school next year to build really a positive culture of belonging and really work with them in that transition. Because let's face it, high school is a big shift and there's not a lot of... I would say attention given to the social and emotional aspects of that. And so that's a lot of our I would say kind of school partnership work is creating those customized camp experiences for whole grades or sometimes subsets of students. During the school year, we run a ton of mentoring groups where every week we meet up with circles of young folks, and that's mostly for boys, but thanks to what we call our One Village Initiative, which is a really big part of our growth, we're now expanding a lot of our services to youth of all genders. So we do all gender circles now, as well as circles specifically for boys. And we do those every week through the school year and facilitate really meaningful, heartfelt conversations around topics that usually just don't get airtime. I mean, they're hard to talk about for a lot of families and certainly don't get attention in the school system. And some of those themes might be, vision, might be rejection and loss, consent, boundaries, death, falling in love, all these things that are really big parts of life that I would say are much better to be facilitated with trained and loving mentors than random people on the internet. Nobody at all, which is the other option. And so the circles model, that program is called Circles. That's one of our longest running programs that just has a tremendous impact here in the community and is something we've also brought to Tacoma.
Truman?
Yeah, I'm thinking back to my youth and just what kinds of things impacted me, what kind of programs and things. And I'm thinking like 4-H, when I was raising animals for show and all of the camaraderie and the things that we did, in 4-H was huge mm-hmm. to me. And then I think of going to camp or to church camp where it was this concentrated impact, where there was sports and all of that stuff. But nothing really combined everything the way you folks are doing it. I'm really impressed. I really like the whole idea because I know how impactful that can be, especially camp where you're away from society, you're right there with everybody else, and you're all doing the same thing. I think back to graduate school. In fact, I went to a weekend retreat that was called a Power and Conflict Weekend. Mm. Incredibly impactful, because we were isolated and staying at a camp over in Eastern Washington, but that concentrated effort really makes a huge impact. And I really like the idea of what you folks are doing, combining all of that stuff. Anyway, fantastic. Yep. Great. Yeah.
Now these activities, like the circles that are conducted with various classes or whatnot, those aren't required of students, are they?
Nope. No, they're opt-in. So, and that's a really important part of our model, especially for camps. Like, all of our camps require the agency and consent of the young people to buy in and say, yeah, I want to do this. Luckily, we're pretty good at making them fun, so that helps. But yeah, the circles in the school, the youth choose to be there. And I think it surprises a lot of people that we can get, 11, 12, 13-year-old boys in a room and they want to talk about their feelings. Honestly, what it requires is they need to feel safe and they need to feel like it's a positive space. They're not going to be shamed. They're not going to be pressured to do something that doesn't feel right. And so we have, so much success because we don't just say, we care about young people. Like, we have, I want to say, frameworks in place and really a culture where that is everything. Like, nothing happens unless the young folks involved feel like they want to be there and that it's something that they choose.
Go ahead, Truman.
Yeah, I'm probably jumping way ahead here, but I'm really curious if you're looking at taking this model to a bigger scale, expanding beyond Vashon, blah blah blah.
Yeah, it has already to some extent. So we've had pilot groups in Seattle, but our most active off-island community is in Tacoma. We have three circles operating right now at two different schools. And we just have a really great, relationship with some strong community members there. And I think one of the things I'll respond with is growth isn't everything to us. Like, mm-hmm. moving in an organic way feels important. I personally feel like there is a local or regional flavor to what we do that matches the bioregion that we're in. Mm-hmm. A lot of the work, I'd say, is transcultural. Like, I have done this. I just flew to D.C. a month or two ago to facilitate a camp. A lot of it can cross borders, but to maintain quality and really deliver on the promise to be there for youth, I think we have to stay pretty close to home. And that's not to say we can't grow in that way, but we need people present in the community where we're growing who are really holding it down and holding center and choosing to orient their lives around it. And not just treating it like, oh yeah, it's just my day job. I wish I could say there might be a time in my life where I'm done at 5. but honestly, my favorite parts and some of the most demanding parts of my role here, they happen when I'm on my way to Thriftway or I just see a young person that I haven't seen in 2 years who's going through a hard time and I happen to see them on the sidewalk when I'm getting a coffee. And that visibility is the reason why this works. That's the part of the village that I think we need to remember matters.
I really appreciate what you're saying. But I'm wondering, can you develop a program where you can bring adults in and give them this training of what's, what the stuff you guys have probably innately?
Yeah.
Can you pass this on to adults that can use these skills?
Yeah, 100%. We run a series of trainings each year. Every spring, usually in April, we'll run a rites of passage leadership training. Mm-hmm. And that's really for folks who are feeling called to participate or get involved in the outdoor camp part of what we do. But it also builds skills for really anybody who's interested in what we would call transformational leadership. And then we do facilitator training, which allows folks to gain the skills to run circles, right, host mentoring groups. But I'll say one of the things I think would be most important for the listeners is to know that we have council groups for men and for women that are running all throughout the year. And those are groups that meet once a week, just like our school model for kids, But they're for adults. And so, you know, adults can come and really participate in our core process that we call council or circle and learn how to participate in this process that is very transformative on its own right, just to really be seen and heard and accepted and to be able to express things in a way that is so uncommon in our culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a few core friends that I feel like I can share anything with. And still, when I show up to council, I am surprised at how vulnerable I'm willing to be and what feelings, I would say, of relief and connection that I'm able to access just by participating in that structure. Right. So, yeah, we'll run drop-in sessions again this summer that will be free just for people to try it out. And then in the fall, we'll start up our regular weekly cohorts for men and women here in the community.
Okay, so yeah, perfect segue. The question I always ask, always, financing, money. Mm-hmm. What do you need and what do you use? How do you, you know, what's the whole money issue with this?
Well, the first thing I'll say is we are so grateful for and also really do rely on the support of our community as a nonprofit. So we have a solid donor base here on the island, and oftentimes these are folks who've had their child participate or just have really heard about what's happening in our work and they feel called to contribute. So if you are one of those people, thank you. And if you're not yet, I would invite you to head to our website and click the donate button, because every little bit matters, and it really does empower this work to grow. We have a commitment to always say yes to people, even if they don't have the means to pay for a course. So a lot of our camps and stuff, there is a fee to participate, but we've, you know, I'm super proud to say this, we've never said no to somebody because of an inability to pay. So we offer, you know, financial aid and fee waivers for anybody who's otherwise like, I need this, I want this, but finances are a barrier. So we show up in that way, and the donors allow us to do that with our model. And the circles in schools and all of that good stuff, we are able to offer at no cost to families. We do receive some compensation from schools. The Vashon Schools Foundation has helped out in the past, and we just have some amazing relationships with, I'll say, some foundations that really believe in our work and have seen the impact of what centering youth can do for a community. So thank you to everybody who has supported, and please feel free to connect us with other opportunities or find that donate button on our website and chip in what you can, because it matters.
Yeah, it looks like you have a number of volunteer adults and probably intermediate aged individuals who help out with the programs. But like I said, you have so many different initiatives and whatnot. If somebody doesn't quite understand what's available or how to utilize the Journeyman, is there anyone they can talk to either in person or via email or text or something?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually have been sitting with this question of how can we better like mobilize or activate folks who want to contribute and get involved, but they don't know how yet, or maybe they don't want to facilitate and like really lead stuff, but they just want to be involved. So couple things come to mind. One is you can call or just literally come into our office, which is right on the Vashon Highway. It's across from VCA in the same building as Vashon Dental. Oftentimes one of our staff members will be in there. We have an amazing office and communications manager. Her name's Lola. Maybe she's listening right now. If you are, hi, Lola. she might answer the emails that come in too of someone who's like, hey, I feel really inspired. I'd love to get involved. How could I help? So she can help with a lot of those questions. I'll also say we're going to have a booth at Strawberry Festival again. And last year, I don't know if I'll hurt any feelings when I say this, I think we had the most poppin' booth on the strip. I mean, we had games and music, and every kid that walked by was like, it's the Journeyman booth. And they were all coming over. It was super fun. But a lot of people were like, hey, like, how can I get involved? And we were able to navigate a lot of those convos on the fly and talk about upcoming camps, talk about other volunteer opportunities that were popping up. So that's a great way to just connect, you know, in person. I'm a big fan of in person whenever, but especially as we're coming out of the COVID era. Please, I'll tell you guys this, I'm really trying to bring back the drop-in culture of Vashon and just life. You know, you guys are old enough where you probably remember parts of your life when like people just showed up, and if you were there, you stopped what you were doing and you visited, and if you weren't there, they would say, great, I'll catch you next time. I'm trying to bring that back. I miss that part of life. And so drop by the office, drop by at Strawberry Festival. Hopefully we catch you, but if not, leave a note, because the in-person connection matters. And I feel that every single time we have an experience, the nourishing nature of being with each other is medicine. And I just heard a stat recently that the CDC has declared really a crisis of loneliness in our country. And I believe a lot of that is because our modern lives are not oriented around being with each other enough. And
you know,
that matters.
That's interesting, because I was talking to some young people here recently, and I was telling them about how we had some people just drop over to the house. I called them up, came over a couple hours later. We sat around, and they go, we don't do that. and I thought, well, you don't do that. I would think you'd be doing that more than we would. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I guess that the drop-in culture, if you will, is taking a hit, especially during COVID. So it is important. I think it's very important.
It was already on the decline, and then COVID just kind of put the nail in the coffin, I think.
Yeah. So, somebody might be interested. Are you in any way affiliated with any religious group?
No, we get that question a lot, particularly with schools and some parents, but no, we're not. And I like to say too, our work has a spiritual element in that it facilitates a deep connection to self and to, you know, nature and community. And many people would describe that as a soulful experience, but there's no religious backing or one affiliation. And I like to say we really strive to be a welcome and inclusive space for anybody, including those who do have existing practices or those that don't.
I have to tell you, when I first heard about Journeyman, I thought, oh man, is that something that was, you know, really called for and appropriate in this in today's culture? I don't mean to sound like an old guy, you know, the kids are all rotten, but the people are lost. The people, like I said, they have strange influences in their lives, and sometimes not the best examples. And it's hard for them to not assume some role that they've seen on television or their friends have placed them in, and to be true to themselves. And I think what you do is just wonderful. Having said that, let me ask you, Nikki, is there anything else you want to share with us today? I'm sure you could share tons of things, but is there anything in particular?
Well, there are. Yeah, thank you, Craig. I agree with you, and I feel you. But things I want to highlight for listeners, we have a pretty unique opportunity coming up just in a couple weeks. If you have visited our website, you'll notice the first slider on there is promoting an event that we're doing in collaboration with Michael Mead, who's a legend by no underestimation at all, local mythologist, storyteller, and really a pioneer in the work of rites of passage, and has done tons of work with young people over his career. So Michael Mead and then our friend and mentor, Arna Rubenstein, is flying back out from Australia. He came out about 6.5 years ago to help us run some of our first camps. And he's inspired a lot of our model based on what he's done in the last 30 years in Australia. So we were able to get Arna and Michael together for a one-day workshop that quite literally will never happen again. There's like, this is a join while you can kind of invitation. But it's going to be here on June 24th. It's at the Methodist Church. It's a one-day workshop. All are welcome. Youth 14 and up are free. And this is a real powerful opportunity to get, I would say, an inside look at many of the core models and frameworks that have inspired all that we've built, and really hearing from two sources of wisdom that have been doing this for a lot longer than we have. So that's something I'd love to see some more of our Vashon folks show up for. The other is that we only have two summer experiences that are not either waitlisted or full yet. And both of those are the teen rites of passage that we're offering. One of them is called The Quest, and that's for young men, roughly ages 16 to 20. And then the other is called Origins, which is a very similar experience, but it's for youth of all genders. And this is the first year we've offered an all genders rite of passage for teenagers. Both of those still have space available and are, I want to say they're difficult to enroll for because they're so transformational in design. Like it really requires someone to be aware of what they're getting into. Not that it's unsafe or dangerous, but just that it's a pivotal time of life. And if anybody here is listening, my sense is we don't have a ton of teenagers listening, but if you know a teenager who's kind of in that stretch, 16 to 20, who's really ready to step into a new chapter of their life and maybe see themselves differently, have a better understanding of their core mission and identity as a person in the world, now would be a really great time to put those questions in front of them and see if they're interested, because they're a month or two away, but because of how powerful and intensive those experiences can be, more time to prepare is better. So I do want to highlight those things. We got the workshop coming up in a couple weeks with Michael Mead and Arna, and then those two teen rites of passages that start in late July and early August that we'd love to get. We'd love to serve a few more of our Vashon teens with.
You know, I just have to tell you, several years ago, I had an opportunity to teach a seminar at the Aviation High School. And I've talked about this a lot because it was really fascinating. They said, just do it on anything you want. You know, it's like, well, yeah, great. Give me a little guidance here, you know. So the title of my seminar was, How Do I Get From Here to There? Mm. And I didn't mean traveling. I meant, how do I get from this port in my life to a career, you know. And to do that, I interviewed, I think, up to 13 people. I used to work for Alaska Airlines. And so I interviewed 13 people from Alaska Airlines, from the CEO down to a line mechanic to a flight attendant, you know, everyone. And I had a questionnaire that I asked where I kind of asked them, how did they get to where they are? And it was absolutely fascinating to me to hear the stories of how these people went from place to place to thing to thing. And I think the thing that you're doing gives them the freedom and the opportunity to explore those kinds of changes. You mentioned it earlier, and it made me think of it. But it was amazing to me. And one of the other things that really came through was every person said, "Oh, well, there was this guy, there was this teacher, there was this. I met this guy in a bar." You know, I mean, there was always someone who had a huge effect on their life.
Yeah.
And you're going to be one of those people when people tell the story of how did they get where they are.
Yeah. And hopefully through the growth of this work too, many more people in our community will also be that person for somebody else.
Exactly.
Right. And
exactly.
Recognize when it's possible.
But exactly.
Just to,
that is,
Truman, just that, to summarize that,
is exactly
that piece.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. The people you meet who change the trajectory in your life and truly can change a downward trajectory into an upward trajectory and totally change your entire life. I remember in parochial school, we had, you know, nuns, and the nuns were not, you know, many of them were not real hip.
Yeah.
Except we had one who in homeroom always just wanted to talk about the stuff we wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. What do you want to talk about? And she was non-judgmental. And it left an incredible impression on all of my fellow students. Especially with the role she played as a Catholic nun. It was quite amazing. And then when I got to be a law professor, I think I was one of the few law professors that really spent a fair amount of time about your role as a lawyer, not just the law.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was really, really important. And is really, really important. Was there some other comment there, Nikki?
I wanted to respond briefly, Truman, as you were sharing. What came up was our definition of a rite of passage, which is, it's an intentional act, ceremony, or ritual rite that is used to celebrate, mark, or acknowledge a major life transition. And at its core, rites of passage is a toolkit for navigating transition. Everybody needs those skills, not just youth. Youth are in it, for sure, right? Especially the teenage years. But every single person needs support to navigate major life transitions. And rites of passage is humankind's oldest toolkit to do that. And I like to say, what better time to be applying those skills in this modern era. There's a lot shifting underneath our feet right now, and it's a good time to remember that sometimes old technology is the best, and this stuff has been around for a whole lot longer than we have.
You know, I here's something I've said a thousand times, and anybody who knows me has heard me go through this, but one of the responses that I got always was, oh, well, I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. And what finally struck me was that, you know, that's not really true. Because number one, you have to recognize, hey, this is an opportunity. You know, here I am with this opportunity. What am I going to do with it? And the second part of it is you have to have some background of something that's going to help you make that transition. And all those experiences in your life that came up to that point contribute to that knowledge. And the third and the most important part of it all is that you must take a risk. Make this step, you have to risk something.
It's got to be a sacrifice.
Exactly, to make it work.
Yep.
And, you know, I have to move to a different city. I have to change jobs. I have to work with a different person. Whatever it is, you have to take a risk to do that. Mm. And I think again, to compliment you, I think you're giving those young people the courage to make those to make those leaps.
Yep.
Just to take that risk. So again, thank you for that.
Thank you, Nikki. Nikki Wilkes, really appreciate it. We have just a few minutes left, and we like to talk about local or national or international issues in great depth.
in the 5 minutes that we have left,
we dive deep.
Yeah.
One of the things I had down here for local was summer traffic on Vashon, the speeding, the sharing the road, or lack thereof, the four-way stop. But that turns into a rant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so let me tell you, I tell you what, go sit at the hardware store restaurant in the window there, or over at Ruby Brink in the window, and watch the four-way stop.
Yeah.
It is amazing how many
people... Amazing's not the word that comes to
mind. Well, there are other words I could use, but those are one of the ones that the seven words that we can't use on the radio. But the number of people who don't stop,
They roll right through there.
Oh, it's some of them at speed. I mean, it is astounding to me.
It is. I'm surprised there aren't more people injured there.
Yeah, and it's not all tourists. I mean, you know, we got some locals who blast through there as well. I mean, come on.
Let me move us to a little meatier subject. What do you think of the whole debt ceiling fight? Truman, I see you. They can't see you. And Nikki, you're welcome to jump in.
You see me shaking my head, right?
I do.
That is such a circus and such a game. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous that we even have this stupid debt ceiling. But the fact that they, oh my gosh, the world's going to go, you know, completely blow up if we don't make this deal. And then, oh, we're not going to make a deal. No, we're not going to make a deal. And of course, they always make a deal. They have to. There's no question. So why do we go through this? You know, what is it, every 2 years or what? Ridiculous.
No, more often than that.
Way of truth.
Somebody made the analogy. They said, saying that you have to negotiate over the budget, in the setting of raising the debt ceiling, is like somebody moving into your house and squatting there while you're on vacation.
Yeah.
And you come back, and you go, get out of my house. And they go, well, wait a minute.
You have to negotiate that.
Yeah. We need to negotiate because there's a moral equivalency here between your right and my right. Mm-hmm.
No, there's not always
a moral equivalency between two positions.
Oh, gosh.
So, I thought the whole thing was absurd. It's just a matter of where do you have leverage? Where do you have power?
Exactly.
That's what it's all about. Exactly. That's what it's all about. Who's going to be the Republican candidate for the president of the United States?
Who knows? I don't even want to think about it. I honestly don't. It's just ridiculous.
You look at the percentages of, you know, support, and man, I'll tell you, it just blows me away. What happened to the party of family values? And you know, it's unbelievable. But you know where my head is at on that subject.
Indeed. Hey, we're out of time, Craig.
I'll tell you what. Since we're out of time, I'm going to for Truman, Bruce and Kevin, who aren't here, Nikki of the Journeyman, myself, Craig, we hope you will join us next Tuesday for the next edition of the Brown Briefly, when we will be talking with our own Kate Dowling, Executive Director of the Voice of Vashon. Thank you all.
Indeed. And thank you, Nikki, very much.
Thank you, fellas.